tear down this wall.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I'm not a crook.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan.
Jim Paris Live, your source for the latest news on money, politics, prophecy, and preparedness. And now your host, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com and the author of more than 30 books, Jim Paris.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to our second segment. And I'm really excited about this guest tonight. I have to tell you, how did we book this guest? One of our listeners by the name of Linda, I won't mention her last name, but she sends me a lot of emails. She's an interesting person and is very active in the world of politics and on newsworthy items. She writes long emails, sends them out. And she said, Jim, I heard a guy who did an interview about his upbringing in communism and how he escaped from communism. And it was a fascinating interview and you need to have him on your show. 2 or 3 months went by. I gave the information to my producer and lo and behold, he's with us tonight, and I want to, before we bring him on, read from the back of his book here. The book is called Escape from Communism, A True Story and Commentary, and it says here, life under communism is cruel and inhumane. Commit the smallest political infraction, and the secret police will arrest you. The only ray of hope is the West, but getting out from communism is difficult. Communist countries have a Berlin Wall around them. It is a crime to escape by crossing the border illegally, and anyone caught is beaten and imprisoned, sometimes even shot. I understand that it's okay, Dumitru, to call you Mitt. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. And your sound,
it's easier
just
to pronounce Mitt than Dumitru.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Now, I thought we could start in a little bit of a different part of the book because I want to hear your whole story and we're going to have plenty of time for that. But for young people today, I felt this was so important because there's this idea that somehow the United States is evil. And let's be honest, the United States is not perfect. No place is perfect. But this idea that socialism might be better or even communism could be better. These are young people that are just obviously ignorant of what that really means. I wanted you to explain to us what is communism and how does it differ from socialism in terms of just a real your own experience of living in it. We'll get into that momentarily. But what does that look like when you wake up in the morning if you live in a communist country?
Well, I lived in both systems. Romania started as a socialist country, and then it progressed into communism. And under socialism, it allows a certain amount of property, private property, to be held by the citizens. And the power is not completely in the hands of the socialists. However, they will not hesitate to nationalize all the big industry, all the media, because their goal is to become a totalitarian system. Socialism does not work for a simple reason. It forbids profit. And when people cannot profit, they have no incentive to work. And when they don't have any incentive to work, what's going to happen to the whole industry, to the whole welfare of this nation is going to go down. And that's how the misery starts.
And now, it's just human nature. I remember as a young person when I was in school, when we'd have a project and they would say, you have to be with 4 or 5 other people. I remember nobody wanted to do the work. So I had to do all the work. And then the next time around, I didn't want to be with those 4 or 5 people in my group because I ended up having to do all the work. And this is what happens in real life. Everyone, if there's no reason to work and you get to be a part of the group and get the same benefit, no one will want to work in the end.
Yes, and it's human nature. We're not bees. We're not ants. That's social intercourse perfect for bees and ants, but not for humans. When you're at work, you strive to do better because you're looking forward to get a better raise than the next fellow who's playing office. Well, under socialism, because everyone works for the government, for the state, no one has an incentive to do any better because everybody's paid the same. So why try harder when the loafer and the hard worker gets paid the same? Now,
yeah, exactly.
As I was saying, the thing about socialists that pretty soon, if the people can vote freely, socialists will be voted out. They cannot afford that. Socialists cannot exist in a democracy. They have to progress toward totalitarianism. And when they do that, they eventually going to get rid of all the other parties and the communists, which are, by the way, are embedded into the socialist system, the most conniving and the most evil people you can ever imagine. And by the way, it's not only communists. There are certain people which are that way. But communists makes it perfect for these maggots to grow inside it. And I'm sorry to use such a harsh word because that's how they are. And eventually they get in total power of the government. They will be able to get rid of all the opposition. First thing they'll do, even the socialists, will confiscate all the guns. They want no opposition from anyone, period. They're the only one which have the guns.
What a timely point, especially
two,
with what's going on this weekend. Everybody talking about these shootings, which are terrible, but, you know, an excuse to take away the guns. Exactly.
And unfortunately, it plays right into their hands. And the media, which, by the way, right now in the United States is mind-boggling what's going on. Just to give you an example, I'm watching the news, and I'm watching CNN and MSNBC, and I don't believe what I'm hearing. Then I'm listening to Fox, and it's a different story. And then it dawned on me, because when I was back in Romania under communists, we were listening to Radio Free Europe and Voice of America to hear the truth, because all the news was fake. The government owned all the media stations, and they constantly told us what a great life we have. So we are hearing, you know, like a breath of fresh air, what was going on in the West, and they hear the truth about what's going on in the world. Well, I feel today that we're the same way. Fox is Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, and MSNBC and CNN are the communist socialist channels.
Yeah, interesting. Take the guns, take over the media. We're right on a slippery slope for both of those things to possibly happen.
Yes, and all this happened, in my opinion, and of course, and that's not my opinion. Obviously, I heard it over other TV stations and radio and so on, and from the books I read. The formula for the socialists and communists to take over was that the country was doing so poorly that someone had to save it. The rich were extremely rich, and the poor were everybody else. Well, the United States was not that case. Everybody's doing well. In spite of the propaganda that we have so much poverty and the difference between the very rich and very poor is extreme, the poorest person in the United States lived better than I was living in my family back in Romania, to get an idea. And we are considered middle class back in Romania. And we are poorer
right.
than the poor people here in the United States. So
this is why I tell people, Mitt, if you want to really see what these other countries are like, travel to them and see and find out why is everyone trying to get into the United States. I mean, if it was so wonderful in some of these countries like Venezuela, why are they all trying to come here? You know, it is sort of almost like it lacks any type of intellectual processing that these people have, because it makes no sense. Just as you said, the poorest people here in the U.S. are rich compared by these same standards in any other country in the world. Again, there's things maybe this country can improve on and no place is perfect. But when you see these people trying to escape, get out of these places and come here, and then you have the ignorant millennials in many cases, some of these individuals, these new young congresswomen suggesting that we need to look to socialism and we need to look to other countries for the way it should be done. It just points out their own ignorance. Now, in your case, let's get a little bit into your story, because you're not talking about this as a, you know, philosophical adventure here. This is your actual life that you lived. And before the Soviet Union was broken up, a lot of young people don't even know this today, that modern day Russia was many of these small countries were all part of Russia, the Soviet Union, and the East Bloc countries, as they were known. That is where you grew up, and that was still during the days of the Soviet Union. Tell us about your upbringing.
Okay. Well, first, just a quick history. Romania, like all the Eastern Europe, were democratic countries. Came the World War II, the Russians invaded Eastern Europe, and after the war ended, then the Russians, with Joseph Stalin, imposed socialism through voter fraud on all those countries. Now, those countries are Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Lithuania, Latvia, and so on. So those countries were brought into socialist complements of Joseph Stalin. Now, once the socialists got into power, there were certain priorities. The first, as I mentioned, was to take away the guns and then the media. Then the next was to imprison all the political opposition. They were brought up on charges, on trumped-up charges, like collusion with the United States against a fair election. All kind of fabricated lies.
Well, that hits home with what's going on here. Falsely accusing Trump of collusion. What about that, right?
It's incredible what the similarities exist when I'm watching on TV the Democrats in the Congress and what they're trying to say. I said, I don't believe this. This is 1948 all over. And the opposition then is thrown in prison, and over time, the people forget about them. They get executed. They basically kill them. Then the next thing is to consolidate their power, their economic power. And that's when they move against the wealthy people. Now, at the beginning, the country was socialist, and therefore only the major industries and large buildings and large land pieces of land and so on were expropriated, confiscated, stolen. But as they consolidated their power, they went down where they took every single store in sight. If the guy had a shoe repair shop, that became state property. Now, when they confiscated all this industry, all this economy, they didn't put the old owners in charge to work for them. The wealthier they were, the worst off they fared. As a matter of fact, my mother's parents, grandfather, he built from nothing, a flour mill, an oil factory, and he became wealthy. They confiscated everything, and they were lucky that they were not sent to the Romanian gulag, where they were worked to death, famished and worked to death. Hardly anyone came back from those gulags. And that was punishment for being the people who provided jobs, the country was prosperous and so on. They got rid of all these prosperous people and all the, agitators a la Cortez became the hero of the people and in charge of everything.
And what about religion? Where does religion fall into this? We have a very large Christian audience. At what stage do they say no more individual religions?
This is a very good question, because socialists cannot compete with God. You have to realize that socialist communism is an atheist religion. They cannot have God. against them or with them. They do not say, first of all, they deny God, and they cannot afford the people to be religious and believe in God. And therefore, based on their beliefs, they could fight and resist socialists. So what they will be doing, and like Stalin, what Stalin did, went in and demolished churches. Well, in Romania, it didn't happen that way, probably because of some international agreements or whatever it was. But religion was not taught in school. I am Christian. I was baptized Christian because of my grandparents and my parents. But I did not have any religious education. As it happened, later on in life, when I became a teenager, our way to protest communists was to go to church. In other words, I show you. You don't think that God exists? Well, we'll go to church. See how you like that. And that was one form of resistance. And by the way, in Poland, had a major influence on Poland, what Polish people did because of the Catholic religion.
Yeah, exactly. And the religious, taking away the guns, taking away religion, taking away the ability to privately own businesses, getting rid of the political opposition, taking over the media. We're checking off all the boxes here of what the left in this country seems to be trying to do.
Well, it's getting even better. The problem is that you have a country like those European countries, Romania included, which was an European country, was doing well for those times. And then it became a third world country because the socialists and the communists ran the economy into the ground. And in order to survive, you had to do all kinds of things. Both my parents worked, by the way, to make ends meet. Food was scarce, clothes, shoes, cooking oil, almost all the necessities for life were hardly available. You know, the toilet paper, it was non-existent. The lines were around the block. The main food for the Romanians was bread and potatoes. For crying out loud, by 9 o'clock in the morning, if you didn't buy your bread in the morning, you didn't have bread for the day. So, and everybody was constantly trying to negotiate how to find the next food. Now, the people did not starve exactly, and I have to say that as a kid, I never went to bed hungry because my parents took good care of me, and they managed. But when you have limited supplies, and most of the time the shelves in the stores are empty, meat, for example, was allowed like 2 pounds per person every 2 weeks. So I too waited in those long lines in cold or rain or heat, holding a spot for my mom and dad so they can buy a few pounds of meat. Now, of course, I never ate a steak back in Romania because the meat was too valuable to grill it. So you made soups out of it, so it lasts you a long time. So here's the thing, okay? Isn't the life Ocasio-Cortez envisions for us all? You know, back then there were no cars, only bicycles. So now she wants us with no cars, no cows or meat, just bread, right? Bring us back into the same poverty and misery socialists brings to every country their clutches on.
And it's interesting because if you just learn a little bit about history, if you do a little bit of traveling, you can see the absurdity of these positions, this panacea, this, you know, rainbows and unicorn thought that we're just going to, you know, and then some people are talking about just everyone gets a check every month, whether they do anything or not. To me, that's going down the same road as well. But I want to go back a little bit and talk about your own personal story, because at the time that you wanted to get out of the Soviet Union, you would not be allowed to just leave. In fact, as I read from the back jacket of your book, this was a situation where if you tried to sneak out, you could be imprisoned or maybe even killed. But you had decided at some point you would rather die trying to get out than to stay there and be trapped in that system. Tell us about the moment that you decided you wanted to escape, and tell us what that process was and how you actually did get out.
Sure. Now, for many people, it's incomprehensible to think that you cannot leave your country. That's not the case in socialist and communist countries. The countries are surrounded by a well-guarded border. Some place they have walls, some place they have fences with barbed wire. The whole border has high watchtowers, which are watching the fields to make sure that people don't escape. So basically, in a communist country, the state wants to keep you in, unlike the United States, which are trying to keep the people out. So what happened? I lived only 18 years in Romania, and the first part of it, I was a kid, I did not understand anything. But as I was getting older, becoming a teenager, realized more and more what a disaster this whole system was. And probably I would not have never left if I didn't get in trouble with the school, where they took us to some place to dig trenches as a volunteer work for the country, you know, for the honor of the country, for the benefit of the country. And they put us to sleep at night without blankets. Well, this is September in Romania. September is cold. So I organized with other classmates a small, an attempt to a strike. Now they compromised and they put us two people to sleep with one blanket until they brought more blankets to appease us. We finished the work. And I thought that was the end of it. However, that was hardly the end of it. They do not accept any rebellion, whatever it is, as small as this was. School students saying, we don't want to stay here if you don't give us blankets to be warm at night. So after we went back to school, I was called into principal's office, and the principal and the state security police interrogated me. And they found out that I was one of the culprits. And basically, I was told that if I do anything like this in the future, I was going to be blackballed and prevented to go to university. Now, what's important about university? The only way you can have a little better life in communism is to have a good education. And because they pay a little bit more and the job is cushier. So I realized that what they warned me. So I said, okay, I'll understand. I'll keep my mouth shut. And I continued to study hard to qualify to apply for university, which, by the way, was extreme competition, like 10 to 20 people per every seat. So it's not easy to get in the university, the so-called free universities. Well, when I realized that they actually start punishing me already, trying to bring my grades down, so I would never qualify to go to the university, I made up my mind that this is it. I got to leave this place. Now, here's the problem. You cannot leave a country without a passport. And if I would go to ask for a passport, they would have been arrested me, and I would be accused of planning to defect because I had no reason to leave the country. Passport was given to people who had a reason, a business reason, or for sport reasons, to go outside the country. So my second alternative was to cross the border illegally. And I use the word escape, not loosely, it's serious, because the entire country resembled a concentration camp, down to the barbed wires, the dogs, the guns. The border was patrolled 24/7. The chances of crossing the border back then was 5%. That means 95% all the people that attempted to cross the border were caught or shot. Not that many shot, but the vast majority was caught. Then they were taken for interrogation, tortured, and then thrown in prison for a couple of years. Try again, you go to prison for 5 years, and so on until you never come out of prison for attempting to escape the hell that we're living in. So that was not a deterrent for me. Even that was not a deterrent for me. I needed to get out of there. So with a classmate, I already made plans, and with another classmate, we decided to run for the border. Now here the story really starts. In a communist country, you cannot go into a border town, or even in a town which is one town away from the border, because the police will ask your ID and you will be arrested. you're not allowed in the vicinity of the border. So what we did, we took a train and we got 3 towns before the border. And from there, we start walking toward the border. And the only way we knew where the border was, because I had no idea how the border, a few things about it, I never saw it, were these tall watchtowers, about 100 feet tall. You could see them on the horizon. As a matter of fact, on the cover of the book, those poles over there, those towers, are those watchtowers.
Okay, wow.
And during the day, if you cross, I mean, we're about to be caught several times because you are so visible in a field of wheat or in a plains field. So the only way to cross it was at night. So the night we were trying to go across, you know, a green flare shot into the sky. Boy, it was daylight. Actually, we could see our shadows on the ground. We dropped on our belly. We stayed there and prayed that we didn't trigger that flash, and hopefully that we're not going to be caught. Now, what happened on our left side? As a matter of fact, a big commotion began. More flares were shot into the air. People were yelling. Dogs were barking. It was chaos, what was happening over there. And then I heard Kalashnikov gunfire, shooting at something or something. You know, they might have shot in the air so the people would not run, or they might have shot at people. But it was obviously that some other people, other desperados like us, were trying to do the same thing, but they were caught.
So that was a distraction away from you. You were thinking at first maybe they saw you, but now someone else, some other poor individual, was the one that was discovered, and you had a moment of them being distracted.
Yes, God protected us, because we stayed there hours afterwards, after it all quieted down, and then on our knees and elbows, we approached the border. And late at night, we crossed the border. Probably we managed to cross the border because the border patrols were asleep. You know, they were not supposed to sleep. They were supposed to walk that border back and forth.
Did you have to climb over a big wall or a razor wire or any of that?
No, because in that area, it was agricultural land. But before approaching it, it was full of deep ditches, which could not come out of them, and other impediments to prevent you from trying to walk at night. In the daytime, they will catch you, but at night was very difficult. But somehow we managed to find this land, which was free of any other detriments, and we crossed the border. But now we crossed the border into another socialist country, Yugoslavia. So now we had to cross the entire Yugoslavia. It took us about a week to reach the other end at the border with Italy, and then we had to cross another communist socialist border. Fortunately, the Yugoslavian border was not as patrolled as well. However, we were chased by border patrol's dogs. And probably they chased us into Italy, because we were in Italy at dark, and we didn't realize we were in Italy until the next morning. When we came out and we saw these, first indication this was Italy was the billboards and then the pavement on the highways. And I said, this is not a communist country. Oh, my God. Wow. We're free. Oh, my. You won't believe the feeling you have when you know you expect the terror of communism.
And I know in the book you get into a lot more details about that journey, and we're just sort of picking out some different spots to talk about in the short visit that we have. And for those just tuning in, the book is called Escape from Communism, A True Story and Commentary. Our guest tonight is Dumitru Sandru, and we're going to continue with the story here for a few more moments. His book is available on Amazon. Is that right, sir? It's on Amazon and the major sites?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, Amazon. You can have it as an ebook and a paper book. And for all my books, you can visit my website, Sandru, SANDRU.com.
Okay, now you're in Italy. Two big questions that I have. What happens to the rest of your family now that is left behind? Because isn't this one of the incentives also that if you were to somehow as an individual get away, that maybe they would have reprisals for your family that's left behind?
My family and my friends were all interrogated by the police, by the secret police, by the state police, to find out if anyone knew what I was planning to do and if they were involved in any way for helping me to cross the border. Now, it was not like in North Korea, where the relatives were sent to a concentration camp as well, if their one of their family escaped. That did not happen, and they didn't find anything wrongdoing on the side of my parents or my friends or my cousins and so on. So, but they were thoroughly interrogated. All the neighbors in my neighborhood were interrogated. No one knew what I intended to do. I kept it a very good secret not to, tell anyone what I was planning to do, with the exception of two people, my girlfriend and my best friend. And they sweat a lot through all those interrogations trying to say that they had no idea what I was planning to do. But they, after the school started, they had a big meeting. And they were told all kinds of lies about me. The fact that although I managed to escape, now I was homeless and desperate in Italy, and I was begging the government to let me come back, and so on. All kinds of lies to convince other students like myself not to try what I tried.
To try to discourage them. Now, what year about was this when you made your escape?
This was in 1971.
1971. Okay, very good. Now, what actually did happen when you got to Italy? Was Italy at that time welcoming refugees with open arms, and they would assist you and help you to re-establish a life there? What was the environment?
Yes. Fortunately, at that time, the Iron Curtain was in place, and United States and all the free countries, the Western countries, were allowing political asylum for people like me. So in Italy, I asked for political asylum, and then I was taken to a refugee camp, and then I was provided for, and they told me, okay, you were a refugee, where you want to go? So I applied to come to United States, and there is a story about that too, but we don't have enough time to go into all the nitty gritty details.
Right, of you ending up in the United States, and because we want people to get the book, we don't need to tell them everything, but if we can just tell them a little bit about your life today. So if I can ask you, how old of a man are you today, and what has your life been for almost 50 years, I guess, you've been free. Did you have a family, children, grandchildren? What career did you go into? Give us the latest update on your life now that you're here.
Certainly. I'm 66 years old. I was 18 when I came to this country. I arrived in 1972. Right away, I had to go to work, which was no problem. At times, I held two full-time jobs. I lived for a period of time in New York City. New York, actually, not New York City. It was Queens. And then afterwards, I moved to California. I went to school. I'm talented drafting-wise. So I became a draftsman. And that's how I started my professional career. I went to school. I went to university. I got a degree at night in engineering. I got married. We bought a house. We had two girls, dog and cat. Did all the things. I became a citizen, by the way. And we did all the things a citizen needs to do to serve, in a way, to be part of the country, to serve their country. I have to say, going back to the fact that United States accepted someone like me, which I was very young, no skills, hardly spoke any English. And I believe that all immigrants coming to United States have to bring something to this country. Now, you may wonder, why? What did I bring to the United States? Because I had no skills, I had no profession, I had no money. What did I bring? Well, I had a strategic value. And that strategic value was for me to inform the people back home how different capitalists is than what they are told. And it is not only that what I told them. After a year being in the United States, I bought my car. Impossible to buy a car back then. And after 5 years in the United States, I bought my house.
Wow.
Nobody could buy a house in 5 years.
You didn't illegally storm the border here with a Romanian flag.
Well,
this is what they do now. They come from Mexico telling you how terrible it is to Mexico. They want to be here. They come with the Mexican flag and they say that we should be like it is there. I don't understand people. If you don't like it there, and this is the same thing now that's happening in our country. We have these blue states, like I'm from Chicago, but I've lived in Florida for many years now. And everyone in Chicago is complaining. The taxes keep going up. The services keep going down. The liberal Democrats are destroying our state, blah, blah, blah. Then they move here to Florida. Then they move here to Florida and they want to vote for all those same people that ruined Illinois here in Florida. It's like a failure to connect the dots to see where, you know, gun-free Chicago, for example, has had 37 shootings this weekend. It will not be reported on any of the national news because they don't want to admit that this gun policy is a failure. The idea of banning guns in the city of Chicago, you're not even allowed to legally carry pepper spray for self-defense as a woman. If you're, you know, working late at night, you can have nothing for self-defense. And yet they have all of this violence. So they're unwilling to, our media is unwilling to cover this. But it is interesting the difference between your attitude as an immigrant and many of the entitlement attitudes of immigrants today that are coming here not to contribute something, but they're coming here demanding something for themselves. And here you are, you came, you bought a car, you got a job. You bought a house, you went to college, you got your college education, you had a career and all of that. Now, and one last question, what happened to the rest of the Sandru family? So you made it here. Once the Soviet Union collapsed in the late 80s, was it possible for the rest of your family to make the escape as well? Or did your parents, for example, did they live out their lives under communism?
Yeah. What happened is that I had a younger sister. My sister is 15 years younger than I am. She was born under Ceausescu's decree that there were no more abortions allowed. Because that was back in communist Romania, that was the only way to prevent births. So, because he needed more kids, the population was stagnating. So since my sister was so much younger, I asked my parents if they want to come and join me in the United States. And they said yes, so I applied. And I brought them in to the United States, my parents and my sister. And they came in 1981, and they live now in Hollywood. My father passed away, and my sister, my mom, live in Hollywood. My sister graduated at UCLA, has a you know, professional job in the entertainment and movie industry, Hollywood industry. So they're doing well. Of course, like anybody else, I'm looking for my welfare and my family's welfare. And one thing is for sure is that when they came here in the early 80s already, they worked, both of them, both my parents worked, and they heard about other people. By then, the welfare system has loosened up a lot. When I came, by the way, in 72 in the United States, I was told, you are not going to get any assistance from the government, period. Understand that. I went to work, obviously. Now my parents were working and says, I heard about other people coming here from other countries that are on welfare. What's that? I said, they're not working, so the government helps them out. That's ridiculous. Why are they working?
It's like such a foreign concept. It's been so good having you with us, sir. I'm with you on all that. We're just like lining up politically and everything. Did you ever have a chance to go back to your home country as an American citizen to see the change that has taken place? Have you ever had that journey?
Yes, I did. First time I returned was in 2006, after, 35 years? I never wanted to go back there until the communists collapsed, and I went there when the country now was a democracy. And I was astounded how the country has changed economically. Politically, that's a different story. But economically has changed to a degree where it was just another European country where there were no shortages. Everything was available. As a matter of fact, in my hometown, there was this big billboard, Chevrolet said on it. My God, Chevrolet, the ultimate imperial American car.
Well, you know, many of these former East Bloc, communist countries are now filled with computer coders and programmers, and that's a big technology area now, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because under the communists, the education was very strong and very strict. I'm sorry to say that nowadays it's lacking just like everywhere else. And I mentioned the fact that the political situation currently is that I went again a year ago in Romania. I spoke to a lady in Romania, and I said, I thought it's going to take about a generation before people start thinking differently, like Westerners, like free market countries. And she had a point which was very interesting, and she said, it's going to take more than a generation. Our old generation has to die away, because generations and generations that grew up under socialism, their work culture was destroyed. They got used to be taken care of by the state. And nowadays, all these old people look at the state to provide for them. And the young people don't understand that you have to work. The government cannot provide you the way they did, and they provide very low. So this entire culture has to be, frankly, to perish away. Because before all these ex-communist countries are going to be truly at the level of the rest of Europe. Now, luckily, they are a part of the EU, so it's a lot easier right now to have ideas and goods flow back and forth between those countries, among those countries.
What a fascinating story. The book is Escape from Communism, A True Story and Commentary. The book is available on Amazon as a paperback, also as a Kindle version. Dumitru Sandru, thank you so much for joining us tonight, sir. We hope you'll come back again soon.
Thank you very much. And God bless
thank
America.
Thank you. What a story. What a story. I enjoyed that. And it was almost like I forgot I was doing a radio show here and listening to this guy's story. And it just gave me chills when he started to share the details of how communism, how they take control. They take control of the media, of religion. They accuse leaders falsely, imprison them. And he's ticking off all these things. And I'm just getting chills because they take over the media. This is what the left's plan is here. It is amazing that we live in the freest country in the world and that we have elected officials here saying that other systems are better than ours. If you love it so much, I know this is controversial, right? Send her back. This is what everybody was upset about with the people chanting at the Trump rally, send her back. But really, what's wrong with really asking that question? If this isn't the greatest country in the world, what's keeping you here? I mean, what is keeping you here? What a fantastic book. A great visit there tonight. This would be a great book for a young person. A lot of history in here and told from the perspective of his actual journey, escaping from Romania, fascinating interview. Thanks so much for joining us. Remember, if it's Sunday night, it's Jim Paris Live. We'll talk to you next week. So long, everybody.